Good morning. We're here with Mr. Tobias Flessenkemper, the Chief of EU Coordination Office, Political Advisor, but I'll actually let him introduce himself. So, Mr. Flessenkemper, please tell us a little more about what is the post that you hold right now, and what is it that you do?
I'm working for the European Union Police Mission in Bosnia-Herzegovina.
We just have a little microphone trouble, and we're fixing it.
Okay, we start again. I'm working for the European Union Police Mission here in Bosnia-Herzegovina in the headquarters in Sarajevo. Mm-hmm. As you know, the European Union Police Mission is a mission in a broader European context. We have different European Union tools or instruments in place in Sarajevo. EUPM, European Union Police Mission, is a civilian crisis management operation in the European Security and Defense Policy. We also have a EU4, European Force, called Operation Altea. Also an ESDP operation. We have the European Commission delegation in Sarajevo doing a lot of technical assistance work. We have the Office of the European Union Special Representative here in Sarajevo, which already shows you there's a lot of coordination within the so-called EU family to be done. EUPM's mandate is tightly linked to both military security aspects, developmental aspects and technical assistance on the side of the European Commission, but we're also underpinning the political process which is led by the USR. Hence we have an European Union Coordination Office because we have to cooperate, tie in, agree with our partners both here in Sarajevo but also in Brussels. This post also includes strategic advice to the head of mission. My office is carrying out the mission reviews.
What is the mission review? I'm sorry.
Oh, we regularly reviewing the progress of the mission.
Okay.
Every 6 months, in order to be able to react to developments here in Sarajevo, but also to new strategic orientations may they be from Brussels, or to the ever-changing environment of the Western Balkans. So we regularly look at our work, what has been achieved, and where do we go next. And do we need to make changes to our mandate, mission, deployment in the field? Do we need to look for new personnel, different kind of expertise? I've been assuming this post some 3 years ago, when the mission was actually in a strategic reorientation. Before that, I'd been working also in an ESDP context in EUPOL Proxima in Macedonia. So I've been involved in policing in a European context for almost 5 years now. Previously in my life, I've been, before coming to the Western Balkans, I've been in Brussels in the non-governmental associative sector for quite some time in the field of education, democracy building, human rights, etc.
Very good. Let's see. Now, do you have any specialty as far as the police work goes? Is there any particular area that you've been focusing on, say, on either management or recruitment or training or community relations or investigation or any other aspect in particular of police work?
I'm not a police officer. By training, I'm a political scientist. And by job experience, I've been working on more on the managerial side, on the strategic side of things. So I don't have any specialty in policing myself. However, through my exposure in a policing environment, in an international policing environment, I have gotten quite good understanding of the various aspects you mentioned. Though we in EUPM, we are not at the mission cycle of where we look at recruiting police officers into Bosnian police, and we are much further on in the cycle of rebuilding policing structures in Bosnia-Herzegovina. So we would look more at crime investigation issues, international police cooperation, what we call the whole criminal justice chain. I coined always this phrase from crime to prison.
Right.
We would like to look at the whole chain of events. So I gained some experience in this field.
Very well. Also, just based on our prior conversation, we sort of agreed that the best use of our time today, which is limited, is to actually start somewhere in the midst of this interview script, and to actually start with, let's see, I think we said depoliticize depoliticizing, or actually accountability and effectiveness?
I think we started there.
Internal management, we start with that.
No, we started with accountability, I think.
Okay, so let's start with accountability and effectiveness. So this is an issue of special interest to many. The issue of what can be done to improve accountability to government and community needs. A police service may respond well to directives from its own managers, but it may not do what the community or political leaders think it's important. So enhancing accountability to the community and policymakers includes improving the capacity to collect and to analyze information about performance and outcomes. Improving responsiveness to government and to community needs and creation of oversight. So have you worked with the local or national police forces to develop this external accountability? And if so, in which capacity? And
the situation in BNH Bosnia-Herzegovina,
mm-hmm.
is very specific,
mm-hmm.
particularly in this field of accountability, oversight. The war, let's start actually before the war. Before the war in Yugoslavia, police had been, as you know, an instrument of the state, and not a service to citizens, an instrument to the party, to the League of Communists. And that tradition can be traced through the war, where police forces, we must say in that respect, played a role, were political tools. And with the establishment of the post-war Bosnian political structure, we came to a hyper-fragmentation of police forces, or as we now like to say, services. And one of the ambitions of the United Nations at that time was to make police, first of all, more accountable to the citizenry. They looked at the qualifications, they looked at appointment structures, trying, however, because of the very political history of police in this area, to put buffers between politicians and police. They established in the UN context independent selection and review boards, very much inspired by Anglo-Saxon models. Public complaint bureaus, quite not hyper-sophisticated, but in my opinion, very good transitional structure. In BNH, this has now led in 2008, in my analysis, to a situation where actually political influence is de jure, very far away from police managers, but de facto the political influence is there on a very daily basis. On the de jure side, I think the structures which have been established by the UN can only be considered in a transitional setup, because these oversight bodies are far too far away from elected politicians, mm-hmm. meaning the parliamentary side is missing. But you know, as people are rather clever in manipulating systems, we have de jure bodies which should be independent, but we just create the political struggle of who should be in these bodies. We mm-hmm. moved into an antechamber, which is even less transparent and which is even less clear to the citizens how people come into these bodies. Personally, I've argued for a couple of years now to slowly move away from these systems and parliamentarize them more, giving thus parliaments and government a certain strategic say, as in any mature democracy, on police management and police oversight, but on the other hand, depoliticize the action of police and giving them more independent. Because the flip side of the current system is also that police is de facto not that independent with their budgets. Police commissioners have no budget autonomy, but the ministers interfere very strongly, etc.
I'm sorry, just a quick clarification. So when you say that you were actually making an argument for this kind of transition mm-hmm. or a switch, where exactly do you make an argument? Who do you make an argument to? Is this a part of sort of the EU strategy that you're advising?
Me personally. I mean,
right.
We have a discussion within the mission.
Mm-hmm.
We have a team working on police reform questions across the board. And actually, one of the pillars, as we say, one of the key, maybe I should say a couple of words about the EUPM's mandate, working actually on three levels. We're working on police reform questions, working on a more operational side to support the fight against organized crime, and thirdly, to strengthen oversight and accountability, all aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all three are in a way interlinked. But in the context of our work on reforming, constantly giving advice on reforming the system in D&H, we have a discussion internally to say, like, how do we improve these oversight mechanisms, these control mechanisms? And in this context, we obviously have discussions. As a European mission, we obviously haven't got, we can't say there is one European model on how you should do this. Obviously, every model in organizing police oversight needs to be responsive to the situation in the country, to local customs, traditions, the capacity, etc. But then obviously all of our colleagues, we come with certain visions into the field. And that would be one place where we have this discussion. And I think we'll be forging a consensus on where we would like things to go. However, as I said, these are systems which have been established only a couple of years back. When I mean transitional, it doesn't mean 1 year.
Right.
But it could well be that these systems are staying in place for 10, 12 years, but then slowly we are moving into something which is more compatible with other EU countries, because obviously we are one of the tools to bring Bosnia-Herzegovina closer to the European Union. So that's one of the fora where we can have these kind of policy discussions. This would also include our partner organizations like the Office of the High Representative or the USR, or sometimes also ECTAP, depending on what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make one last remark.
Please.
on oversight, politicization, etc. In the Yugoslav system, the police was not an independent organization. It was part of the Ministry of Interior, the MUP, as I say here, the MUP. And this tradition also is still visible in Bosnia-Herzegovina, particularly in the entities and the Federation and the Republika Srpska and then the cantons, whereby actually minister and police commissioners or directors of police have a very strange, very direct working relationship, and where we can always and still see a direct influence of the minister in the operational activities of police. So the way how you phrased the script phrased
mm-hmm.
the question is, it's more complicated to answer here.
Mm-hmm.
So to sum up, depolitization of operational influence, a stricter separation of political oversight and operational management of police, but that wouldn't mean to exclude politics from police, but give them a clearer defined task in overseeing police. And basically, and thus we have gone quite some miles already, mechanisms which also would allow the public to hold those politicians who are responsible for police accountable.
And what are those mechanisms? And are
they aren't there yet.
They are there, okay. They're the plan.
They're the problem. Still, I'm saying this will be the objective.
Mm.
Currently, because it's basically we still have, in a way, the MAP structure.
Okay.
An integrated Ministry of Interior. In B&H, we have made a slight separation. We have brought these kind of independent appointment bodies, review bodies, into the fold. But locally, for entity police, for cantonal police, the MAP structure is more or less still there. Okay, it's not as bad as in Croatia or in Serbia, where police have remained largely unreformed.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have that structure. But with the reforms we have pushed, for instance, the establishment of the border police, the establishment of the SIPA, the State Investigation and Protection Agency, we have already moved into a delinking ministerial functions from police management functions.
So it seems that the way you're phrasing it, that accountability is very closely tied to depoliticizing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're basically talking almost the same thing.
It is, for us, in our vision it is.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, you phrase the question differently.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, we are in a bit of a contradictory situation, but a situation that is maybe difficult to grasp sometimes for outsiders. Police has the highest approval rate in this country of any kind of public institution. 90%, and different polls have told us this, of the population trust their police.
But is this, pardon me, I mean, this is very curious.
Yeah, exactly.
What is this trust based on? Is there a history to this trust? What is it based on? I mean, where is it coming from? Especially if you're talking about a police that was in a different system, a communist system, and that you've described in a certain terms as sort of loyal to the state and having claiming allegiance to the state primarily, not to the citizens. So where is this sort of faith, this trust, this what have you that's
coming what I'm saying.
From?
I use the word contradictory, but it isn't contradictory. You have to consider certain conditions of BNH, of Bosnia and Herzegovina. It's a highly fragmented country. It's a very people are very immobile, so local communities stick very much to their belly. The police officers out of a population of 3.5 to 3.8 million, we have 17,000 police officers. So they're very close to their communities where they live and work. So the street level policing, in a way, the people, the police officers, they see the people are very close to themselves. They may also be relatives. So at the visible level of policing, people feel close to their officers. What they don't trust, but this is where this trust comes from, which polls tell us, we suspect it comes from there, but what people don't trust is the police management or even the politicians involved in these questions. They immediately enter the discourse of corruption, politicization, the link, the famous Balkan link of police, criminals, politicians, which dates back to the last days of Yugoslavia, the secret police element where these privatization elites come together, etc. So there's very little trust in the upper echelons. But the lower echelons, what people are seeing on daily, this is not a real problem. Despite even the fact that we do know of petty corruption, though the petty corruption is relatively limited. It's of course not really acceptable levels, but we see decreasing trends. They know the population is aware of the pressure police is under, sometimes from political level. And they sometimes even defend their police officers against, you know, the political level who would not allow them to do their work. So this is a bit sort of the picture. It's very, you can only sketch it. I mean, because there are so many things which in the reality here is more complex than the school book of crisis intervention, post-conflict policing would tell you. This has a lot to do also, as I said, with the nature of Bosnia-Herzegovina, with the nature of the conflict, which was very complicated, and with even the territorial nature of this country. Now, depolitization, accountability, to give you one more element for consideration in the future. On the federation side, the federation, as you know, is split into 10 cantons. These link politics, police, is extremely close on a very tactical level even. If you look at some of the cantons, like the smaller ones, like Orashi canton, Goraste canton, but even Livno, Ljubuški, etc. These are cantons which have a very small population, which is not even a borough of a larger city in Western Europe or America. Here we have a very close link of local politics, interfering, managing almost day-to-day policing. You also need to consider that police is one of the few competences of cantons, meaning they really have a say on this. Also, it consumes quite large part of the budget, which means there we see more petty corruption in cantons, we see more petty corruption, we see more day-to-day interference. In the Republika Srpska, which is closest still to the Yugoslav model, the police performance on the lower echelons is probably better, less corrupted, less susceptible to petty corruption, but the system as such is more politicized. meaning there is an implicit knowledge of everyone in the Republika Srpska police if there is a difficult case or something which is close to those in government or close to criminal circles, not to touch it at all. So people would circumvent these problems and concentrate on the easy cases. So we have two different ways of politicization. One is a strategic politicization with a rather solid police structure in the Republika Srpska, and the other one is a more local politicization with a more chaotic structure. But that has left at least the federation level police, because there's 10 cantonal police and a federation police, a bit out of the loop, which means you will meet also Mr. Miletic, who is the director of federation police. The federation police has the advantage of not having the strategic political interference because of the weakness of the federation, and some of the major arrests we were able to support in the last couple of months of a rather large and complex group here in Sarajevo is probably also due to this difference of the political system in the two parts of the country. So depolitization is the key accountability question. Community policing questions, the service idea, etc., is relatively close both to the population and the people in the police. However, there is, if you go through this, we would see a lot of lack of skills, of imagination, of a real culture of service, etc. But I always coined this phrase, you're probably better off meeting a Bosnian police officer, it would be more polite than, say, a police officer in a country far east in Europe. You know what you get here.
Just a curious question that came to my mind as you were talking, and that has to do with the effectiveness, in a sense, because you're comparing these two models of politicized police force, and it seems that
service, we like to say, and it's really important that you say service.
Pardon me, I'm quite new to the terminology, so. So service, police service, the two kinds of models of politicizing the police service. And it seems that in both cases, you're actually talking about the reform that needs to take place. You're talking about models that are more appealing and that are more service-oriented. But at the same time, you're talking about these two contradictions in practice, but at the same time, that have their own effectiveness. You're talking in terms of Republika Srpska, sort of the circumventing the cases that you don't touch, but at the same time providing other services to the community and to the government, and even eliminating something as petty crime, corruption, or what have you, petty corruption rather. And then also you're talking about effectiveness in a sense in case of the federation, whereas there is a sense of trust and confidence in the police. Even though it might be based on sort of ties of intimacy and knowing police officers by other means, by the virtue of them living in the same community. So we're talking a kind of effectiveness in practice, but you are actually, the script itself has a different kind of effectiveness in mind. And I'm sure that when you're talking about accountability and depoliticizing and so forth, there is a model of effectiveness that you are kind of aiming to. So I don't know if this is an appealing question for you at all to tackle, but it's kind of sort of tackling the issue of what effectiveness do you have even with these contradictions in practice, and kind of the effectiveness that you're trying to actually achieve and hoping for and actually see likely to appear in cases that the depoliticizing and accountability are put in place on both levels, both a better level to accountability towards the government and a better level of accountability sometime in the future towards the community itself. If this is not an appealing question at all.
It is a very appealing question.
The
word effectiveness is something which we don't really use that often. But anyway, we actually, if you look back into our analysis, police is relatively effective. I mean, also we are not unhappy with the results, particularly in the general policing, public peace and order, general policing, common crime. They are actually doing very well. Mm-hmm. The key problem starts with the politicization, etc. And then it doesn't become effective because police is not independent. And also, citizens have seen very little results. They know what is going on. And this is why the European Union has put such an effort or an accent on this, what we call organized crime supported the fight against organized crime. And we have also found out, you know, you may have a very effective police with the right technical capabilities, the right education, etc.
I'm sorry, I'll just make a quick adjustment of the microphone because we're getting some tie noise here.
But please carry on. I'm sorry if I interrupted
your train of thought. What did I say? They're effective. The organized crime. Yeah, exactly. What we see is effectiveness across the board, developing in a satisfactory manner. And you may have now a relatively effective police, but it can only act inside the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to know that here the criminal codes have been changed in the last couple of years, shifting more responsibility towards the prosecution. Basically putting the prosecution fully in lead of the investigation. With prosecutors, we have never led an investigation. So the task for us in order to get an effective, get results, was very much to look now at a new interface, police-prosecution. Less at the interface anymore, citizen-police. Citizens report, of course, there's under-reporting like everywhere else, but we have also put in place certain community tools like a crime hotline, which we marketed very much together with the local police, an anonymous line where people can report crime anonymously. We're promoting also the usual telephone numbers of police. We've invested quite a lot of awareness raising of report. It's Vaša Polizia, it's your police.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the claim Vaša Polizia is used now throughout Bosnia-Herzegovina and is accepted. And that is reflected in the high approval rates. So the interface for effectiveness becomes now prosecution. It actually becomes to a certain degree prison. Bosnia-Herzegovina has inherited a prison legislation which is extremely insufficient for nowadays threat scenarios and nowadays high-risk individuals. It was very much a social correction kind of prison system of the late 80s of Yugoslavia, which is still in force here, which means incarceration next to where you live, a lot of leave of absence, etc. It was very much a reintegration model. But obviously in Yugoslavia, you haven't had high-risk individuals committing complex crimes. You had actually mostly political crime or very petty crime. So it had more a social function, prison, than a really deterrent function or even separating people from running groups. So now we have to start to look at this as well to make it effective. Because what is the value of a good investigation, a trial? Incarceration, and by then, because a trial takes its time, people already qualify for the leave of absence. Because after a third of the sentence, etc., they can go out. You need to look at the infrastructure. And this, how high-risk individuals are actually put behind bars, because we know that they're managing groups from within prison. All of this has to be seen, and this is reflecting on the perception of effectiveness of police.
Mm-hmm.
If the whole system doesn't function, police may be effective in its own rights. But this, the citizen wants a result. He wants to be sure that things go then into the right direction. But also the police officers want to see these results. And it also enhances their effectiveness. If they see we're working well together with the prosecution, speedy trials, good incarceration, etc.
Yeah, this is one.
So you cannot see it in isolation. That's basically
right.
to sum it up.
No, this is really interesting.
And effectiveness cannot be seen in isolation.
Well, bringing up this intersection with prosecution
is
just amazing. An amazing new piece of information for this particular archive on policing reforms or policing in Bosnia in general. But I'm something I've heard off of the street from the police officers themselves. Some were quite frustrated by the fact that say they get a call in for a crime for what have you, and they go on to investigate, and to sum up their frustration, I don't quite understand the mechanics of it, but basically the point is that they can only do so much because they have to rely on the prosecution to actually send in the team and help them with the investigation, and these people don't know exactly what they're doing, and by the time they get organized or even manage to send people out in the field, the crime is already done with the criminal or the alleged criminal has fled and the damage has already been done, and they feel quite goofy and frustrated and what have you, and they're kind of looking back at the good old days when at least they could have gone out and felt like they could get, when they get a call, they can go out and respond themselves rather than relying on a third party that is, as they see it, is just slowing them down and deferring a response. I mean, is there?
That's exactly it, what I try to say in a bit more abstract terms.
Right.
Through the change of the legislation, there is the lead function of the prosecution for certain level of crimes. What we have been working on now is, and actually just yesterday there was a conference, and there's a high judicial and prosecutorial council in this country, and we have been together with all our partners when we sort of spotted this major difficulty, frustration also coming from the side of our police colleagues. We really pushed hard now to develop better rules and regulations between at this interface, to draw clearly the delineation, how should you work, how independent can police act up to a certain level, because you cannot wait for everything for an instruction of the prosecutor. We also had cases where ourselves, we had to involve ourselves with the prosecution as EUPM, as foreign police officers, explaining to the prosecutor that for a certain case you have enough evidence, because prosecutors obviously want sometimes to take even more evidence, but in order to prevent further things happening, it's sometimes important to say this is a sufficient amount of evidence to order pretrial detention, which allows them to investigate further while the alleged offender or the suspect is at least taken out of the game for a while. So this is a very, very important issue. It has not been considered, and if you look in the policing history, in the international policing history, the rule of law element, the criminal justice element, and the policing element has been seen in isolation. This lesson, I hope, at least for what we know here in the European Union context, has been learned. You cannot do a police standalone mission. Even a community policing mission, if you would only do a monitoring thing, it cannot be seen in isolation. You have to see the whole criminal justice system, at least, when we talk about, again, effectiveness as well. And that lesson, I think, has been clearly learned. So when the reform of the criminal legislation has been promoted here, mainly by the Office of the High Representative, a couple of years back, they weren't even considering the effect of these changes for day-to-day policing.
Okay.
And that's where exactly these stories,
right.
These stories we know very well.
Right.
And they have led to a huge reorientation of our working methodology.
No, this is very helpful. I think we got a fairly good picture. Sure, just a second. We'll stop for a second. We'll pause. 2, 3, ready? Okay, so Mr. Flassenkemper, we'll actually move on to the next section. Let's talk about working with non-state security groups. And you mentioned briefly prior to recording that you actually do have a cooperation, or that you have interesting things to say about this particular topic. So let me actually read it off the script to formulate the question, and then we can take it from there. So another issue of special interest to many is the relationship between the police and non-state security groups, such as neighborhood watch associations, night watch patrols, or street committees. And sometimes these units are formed by groups of citizens. And in other instances, they're under the authority of elders or traditional religious leaders, if that's applicable to Bosnia. Sometimes police forces also reach out to traditional leaders or respected members of the community or religious groups to help resolve questions, issues, disputes. So my first questions are about the non-state security groups and the police. If non-state security groups were present in places you have worked, or actually rather in Bosnia particularly, would you describe these groups very briefly?
I mean, the groups we are most interested in is the private security industry. As you know, the reform of the military sector, the vetting process, certification process, as we call it here, has left a couple of people, hundreds, thousands, estimates vary, without a job in the public security sector. So there is an emerging industry of private security companies. That has also to do with, obviously, the economic developments in the country and the protection of sites. And post 9/11, obviously, all kinds of new security regulations which are being put in place, both by companies and public institutions. So we have observed here an increase of the industry, and initially this industry has been very much also dominated by, let's put it that way, shady characters, people who had a wartime record, who had links to politics, wartime politics, etc. So our interest has been very much to look at this sector in order to enhance the regulative framework. Again, we are here in Bosnia-Herzegovina up to a fragmented system. Regulation is devolved to cantons entities, so there is no state-level regulation. There may be different rules with regard to the carrying of arms of these companies. In some areas, 50% of their personnel may be allowed to carry arms, in others less, etc. Weapon registries, etc. So this has been actually the prime focus in this area. We are cognizant of the fact that the private security industry has a role to play. Where we got extremely wary was when the Republika Srpska wanted to create its own Republika Srpska-owned private security company. So where actually we had the impression that police reform efforts we were undertaking would maybe be implemented by some of our partners, but at the same time largely unsupervised and uncontrolled structures in state ownership or in public ownership would be created. And that's where we started also together with the Office of the High Representative to look very particularly at this area. We also had carried out a couple of inspections of these companies together with our friends from UFOR to see weapon holdings, the whole mechanism, how do these companies function. We are not pessimist about these companies. We believe there is space that they can integrate in a overall security system, and they have their place in that. But this needs to be closely watched. For Bosnia-Herzegovina, it is also a typical result of the war. And you have it actually in the all over the Balkans region as one of the transition processes. You have it with the in neighboring countries, with those officers of the state secret police who had been left without a job, going into this sector, etc. On the non-commercial side, we don't have these kind of phenomena like neighborhood watch, etc. What we have, however, tried to do in the framework of community policing is to strengthen ties, particularly in those areas, rural areas where police stations are remote, where you have so-called returnee communities in rural areas who have a feeling of insecurity. Objectively, they may not be less secure than in more urban areas, but there's a feeling of insecurity which obviously can be explained psychologically due to what happened to those communities a couple of years earlier.
I'm sorry, and we should just probably clarify for the sake of whoever the listener is going to be, the return issue.
Because
the idea is that
In Bosnia-Herzegovina, with the peace treaty, the Dayton-Paris Peace Accords, the right to return to pre-war communities, municipalities, or the pre-war place of residence is guaranteed, and has been a key objective of the international community and partly of the authorities of Bosnia-Herzegovina to implement this right. Now, it's not the place to do a critique of if it works or not, but there are people who have decided to return to their pre-war municipalities, largely in rural areas. This has been a very complex process, and in the rural areas, people live in dispersed settlements or in very small villages, and they may feel insecure as a so-called minority returnees. They are groups of people who don't belong to the ethnically dominant group, and the police is usually managed by the group which is ethnically dominant. To give you an example, very concretely in the Republika Srpska, you have in the Eastern Republika Srpska, which is along the Drina, where horrible crimes happened during the war and in these rural communities, older people mainly who turn back to their pre-war homes, and these are in the mountains, far away, etc. And they have a subjective feeling of insecurity. So what did we do to strengthen their feeling of security? We try to create the, we called it security forum, or they had all kinds of other names, but little more municipality-based fora where people could discuss security issues. It quickly actually evolved then into more general public peace and order policing, market day, organization of traffic, and these kind of things. That is not really a non-state police security actor, but these are fora where this happens. We have never really seen an emergence of neighborhood watch. However, just recently, through an unfortunate combination of coincidences, in this spring, we had three quite terrible acts of juvenile delinquency, of juvenile violence, killing people. And there we had sort of reactions in the population to strengthen our calls for more police presence, for more presence of police, for instance, in trams, in autobuses, etc., etc. Let's see how it plays out, because obviously here in an area where there's very little crime, actually, these kind of incidents trigger always a bit of a disproportionate reaction. I mean, it's very unfortunate when people are killed in a tram, but it's not something that happens every day. The last time that something like this happened is years ago. But then you have this call also for, you know, we have to take a bit more care of our security. But people in Bosnia-Herzegovina still mainly believe in the state, and so all the calls go in the right direction. Police be more present.
And then these, what were the actual venues for people calling for more police presence, or even just voicing their anxiety about these crimes and so on? What were the particular venues? Was it?
Yeah, this is interesting, because we could actually say this has always been a combination of press excitement and somehow street protest. The street protest, however, here we have to interpret it, is there are two strands, like everywhere. The press has taken the more oppressive kind of position, and the mass press, I mean, there's very few press and TV, playing on these anxieties and calling for socially oppressive solutions, while more liberally minded groups have actually started to do demonstrations on the street more against the political system, to say the political system is not paying enough attention, for instance, to the needs of the young people, and addressed demands of resignations of mayors, of ministers, etc. It was very unorganized in a way, and it was not very targeted in their demands, either side. The more oppressive side got it wrong, because statistically there is no problem, of course there are incidents, and the other ones got it wrong in terms of that the demands were too untargeted. The whole thing played out quickly. I think it's almost forgotten.
Okay. All right, so let's actually move on to the next question. Let's see. Again, mindful of time, let's see, it's pick and choose. Reform process?
Yeah, just go for the next one.
Let's do the reform process, or processes rather, in terms of Bosnia. I'll put sort of a general question here, I'll read it off the script, and then you will, as you've done it in the past, sort of, you will make it country particular. So we have talked about the experience in a number of functional areas, so we would like to turn the conversation to some of the broader challenges that often affect efforts to build or reform an institution. Let's see. Okay, there's something actually here. There's a question about, let's see. It's very rarely the case that personnel have all the skills they need to carry out their jobs effectively and support a process of change. In this imperfect world, do you have advice about a sequence of steps reformers in general of police, should follow? Are there some tasks that just have to be done before others? And perhaps this goes back, it ties nicely into your talk about the interface and sort of the observing police as this island, this kind of isolated thing versus an integrated system. So it's the question.
It's a very good question, and we have been thinking about this obviously also as an organization, also in the broader context of what are we doing as a European Union, having launched a couple of police missions over the last couple of years. There are no obvious mechanics. Traditionally, we could see vetting, certification, training, retraining, new cadets, setting up training institutions, developing curricula, get the people out. That was sort of the idea. Now we know in a rather sophisticated country like Bosnia-Herzegovina, which had a very good policing system before the war, which has a policing and administrative tradition which dates back very long, that was a bit too simple of an answer. Of course, training needs to be done. However, countries and problems are never in isolation. I think they need to be more focused from the beginning on recurrent training. Things are developing very quickly. If you look in the field of crime investigation, which is our particular interest, the technical capabilities you need to fight crime nowadays, interception, telecommunication interception, internet traffic interception, the understanding of internet traffic needs permanent training. The development of Skype, Skype.com as a communication platform, voice over internet protocol, is something 10 years ago was unperceivable, that actually people would communicate in that way. So we have to look at an inbuilt mechanism of recurrent training. Another element was, I think we had an intellectual problem of understanding. I always formulated you have three levels of intervention: skills, capacity, and attitudes. Skills can be addressed rather quickly. And again, I think the skill sets always need to be reviewed. The capacity to manage in a more complex and open society for the police to interact, community, politics, business, understanding the broader, for instance, European integration process, meaning what is going on with new requirements coming in through the Schengen border free travel regime, which the Schengen standards which have to be implemented, other kinds of new policing standards and police cooperation standards, short globalization we could call it, because there is no national policing anymore. This is something which will take more time. And it takes time at home. And the third one is attitudes. Attitudes is a longitudinal problem. And we discussed before force and service. In Yugoslavia, in communist countries, police was a force of the state, was servicing the party and the state. It wasn't a service to citizens. To change this attitude to service not no longer the authorities, but to be service to the citizen and the service of the citizen, this is something which takes time. And not only within the police. We had very interesting discussion here, and a polling actually about the police. In context of the poll we talked about earlier, where people said, and you can hear it all over again, give them back their batons and everything will be fine. They should be much more aggressive, these police officers, again, etc. So also the attitude of the public is sometimes not there. That policing doesn't mean, beating up people. All of this needs different level of intervention. I wouldn't know how to sequence them, because only by doing you will find out what is a missing element. I talked about the holistic approach to the criminal justice system. This was not I don't blame anyone, but it was not foreseeable. Was not clear that this would be the next problem around the corner. So sequencing will always need to be very country-specific and very group-specific. Mm-hmm. Of interventions, I mean. I think you had some element on training. What should come first, no?
Yeah, it was just about sequence of steps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for instance, I mean, here in this war scenario, we had, a police service that allegedly had 80,000 plus members in 1995. I mean, where anyone was sort of drawn into the police, paramilitaries, etc. Of course, getting all these people out of the service or the force at that time. Mm. Is obviously the first thing to have to do. You have to organize the ranks to see who is actually qualified, who has a minimum standard, who is clean, who hasn't committed crimes, etc. That is obviously a step. You need to know who you're working with. But I guess pretty soon after you need to refresh this already. And these are things which are traditionally done. But the this is, I would even consider, hardware. You know, seeing who's there, who should be in there, how do we get new people into this. That's the hardware. But what is the software you're putting into this system? That you need to be, I think, far more flexible. Because, again, I mean, people knew how to police. Interestingly, obviously, also in Bosnia-Herzegovina, the certification / vetting process resulted in a lot of the old police officers staying on. You're going probably to meet some police commissioners and police directors. These are people who joined the service in the 70s. They have a solid education, police education. But there you can't start explaining them to do basic work, but you need to get actually a bit more sophisticated software in their management capacity. That's what I'm saying. Skills is probably for the younger ones, for the lower ranks, but capacity is something you need to look at. Managing, understanding the complexity. Development of initiative has been one of the key problems we have here. The self-initiative.
Very good. There's actually the following question. What kinds of allies in the host country are essential for success? And do you have any advice about the best way to build support among these people?
I mean, our key allies is our target population, meaning the police itself.
Okay.
If you are not working in partnership, in our view, now, we are in a particular view because we are an EU mission who wants to help Bosnia-Herzegovina become part of our family. So we are no longer a international organization, but we are an international organization, but we are an organization where we want BNH police officers to become our colleagues inside the European Union.
And is that well understood, or how
Yes.
is that even communicated?
That's communicated every day. On the political level, but also on a practical level. We are working, obviously, on very specific instruments. I mentioned, for instance, the Schengen Acquis, which is the technical word for basically migration and border control standards, which is regulated throughout the European Union. And that is a real European standard, and this is clear that we're not going to work on issues which wouldn't fall into this Acquis. We're looking at the integration of Bosnia-Herzegovina into Europol, which is the European Police Office in The Hague, where we have now signed the strategic agreement last year, and hope that we get Bosnia-Herzegovina in the near future to sign an operational agreement with Europol, which means we'll then move into an exchange of personal related data and case files through The Hague, which is then real policing. It's no longer advice and so on, but it's partnership in real policing. So that's a key ally. There's a number of more allies. I think where here in Bosnia-Herzegovina we have most problems is the political allies, meaning the parliamentary level, which would be also in line with our idea of police as a service. This has been very underdeveloped. We don't have I'd like to call it a security community within BNH, made out of police professionals, parliamentarians, NGOs, human rights defenders, the legal system, all kinds of people should be part of a security community. It's a bit of a virtual community, but people who are interested in this, even the business community must be interested in well-functioning police, because that makes Bosnia-Herzegovina interesting for investors, mm-hmm. makes it interesting to run business, and if you have a problem, you know, we have responsive police. So that kind of alliance is still in an emerging phase. And again, I mentioned it before, we had worked, or we are working a lot with media and outreach together with the local police on certain issue-setting campaigns. And that was good, probably also to win in the end the general public for our efforts.
The next question has to do with cultural specificities. And this is how it's phrased. Are there underlying political, social, or economic conditions that have made reform harder or easier in your current job? And could you tell us about one cultural difference that has required you to change a proposal you have made? Was there a cultural practice that made it easier for you to do your job, or any aspect of it? And then earlier we were talking about, for instance,
I mean, the underlying difficulty of this country is the constitutional setup. The constitutional setup of Bosnia-Herzegovina makes every reform extremely difficult, because, you know, Bosnia-Herzegovina is now a system, a political system, which is not hierarchically organized. Everything exists in parallel. The state level, which is Bosnia-Herzegovina, the two entities, the Brčko district, the 10 cantons, they all have their level of competence. This is reflected in the police, but also in the judicial system and in other parts of public administration. And these are all, they are not in a hierarchical system. Maybe to someone who knows a federal state like the United States of America, there is no hierarchy here. It's all in parallel. Even the court system is not hierarchically organized in that way, that you could actually say you go from the lower level courts up to the constitutional court. So this is a real problem here. This is the heart of the problem of this country and the definition of how people want to form a polity in Bosnia-Herzegovina. I'm always wary of this argument of cultural differences, at least in a Western Balkan context. As a EU organization, we have a lot of expressions of European cultures and traditions within the European Union, and Bosnia-Herzegovina is representative of many of those. If you look into our southeastern European member states, from Greece, Romania, Bulgaria, Central European member states, but also Austrian, Germanic traditions are reflected here. So I wouldn't be sure to say that we have huge cultural differences. There are determining factors, in particular with regard to the expression of citizenship, of freedom, of how you interpret your responsibilities and rights, which have been more complicated here. A, because of the pre-war history of Yugoslavia, the war which has been fought on mainly so-called ethnic grounds, which have then been sort of cemented in a political system which is based on group rights. That has been a problem. But is this a cultural problem? I don't think so. It has been more a build-up of certain political factors which found an expression in the system.
So you're talking in the sense, rather than putting that as a cultural specificity, you're talking about some local particularities in
yes.
a sense. And then you were talking earlier, for instance, about, how did you put it, the initiative, for
yes.
instance.
Yeah, but that you can see, I mean, if you look into the member states of the European Union, and I'm myself from Germany, and obviously Germany had been the first enlargement country of the European Union with the integration of the former German Democratic Republic. And you see many of these traces of the socialist system in public administration. It used to be very hierarchical. It was basically ordered straight from the general secretary of the party through different ministries, etc. So this kind of self-initiative, I wouldn't say this is a Bosnian-Herzegovina specificity. Some people may argue that the tradition of this country as being always part of larger empires has possibly led to a certain attitude in Bosnia to let the state be the state and rather wait to do before doing something yourself. I'm not a sociologist, so I won't judge on this, and I find that always very difficult to say there are sort of, this is for me, it's cultural determinism. And seeing, for instance, the younger people here, or even middle-aged people and older people, you can't say that all of B&H citizens are like this. So there's a mixture of different influences, and of course the institutions are rather heavy. Now the question was, has cultural differences made us to change a certain proposal or not? I wouldn't be able to think of anything where we could say like this is really because of cultural differences and we changed certain things. It has mainly been political considerations rather, where we would have, can give you an example, we have looked now into so-called laws of internal affairs. Every level of government, cantons, entities, Bürgerbezirk, district, state has a law on internal affairs. And we have been working on harmonizing these laws, meaning that you have different legal texts in these different entities, cantons, state, but that the content of these laws is the same. And one of the proposals we made for the cantons was to reduce the number of police administrations. This is a sort of a sub-level on how you organize your structure, to the minimum. That was a very rational proposal. But some of the cantons are so-called special regime cantons because there's this power-sharing agreement between Bosniaks and Croats, which then basically meant we had to withdraw some of our proposals because a certain municipality would be part of this larger power-sharing agreement and people felt they needed a police administration. And that comes back to what I said earlier. People feel very much that their rights, group rights, history of the conflict, but also history of Yugoslavia and even history of the Ottoman Empire is enshrined in certain institutional and administrative units. Now, if that is true or not, I don't think so, because, I mean, if you look at from a service point of view, it doesn't really matter if there is a police administration in a small place like Djepce, or if everything is done from Travnik. That doesn't make any difference. But these are the kind of things where we often have to adjust for political considerations. But I wouldn't call this cultural. That's politics.
Very good. Mr. Flassenkemper, I think we have time just for one more question, so squeeze it in. How about this? Are there any innovations or experiments you know about with respect to managing the reform process, either in your current position or elsewhere, which you think merit more attention?
Innovations,
experiments. Bosnia specific or not?
I like to say, I mean, it may be now very obvious, and with hindsight many things are obvious, but I think the innovation, not only we in Bosnia-Herzegovina came to, is the holistic, as we call it, the holistic approach to criminal justice and to the whole justice system, that needs further development, and that needs further development in peace operations or your institute is called fragile states of something like this. This needs, I think, more thinking, because in the end you need to be able to provide the full assistance package from the beginning. But that's much easier said than done. Now, if you coming in a post-war scenario like we here in Bosnia-Herzegovina in 96, I mean, lots of things had to be done. From basic humanitarian things to getting things back in order. So maybe there more reflection needs to be made on how to develop instrumental packages, operational packages, for aid workers or those who come and assist the system. But I still believe you have to do it from the beginning. Personally, I'm very much on the side of traditional justice systems, and there's been a lot of discussion about transitional justice nowadays in our work. We somehow fail to understand sometimes what is meant with it, because in the Balkan context we have opted through the establishment of the ICTY, through the the reinforcement of the rule of law locally, etc., for a very traditional concept of, you know, trying war crimes, etc. But maybe these kind of transitional justice discussion can be brought in from the police into this holistic approach from the beginning. Is that an innovation? I'm not sure, because I don't have an overview of all the research and all the studies and practice that has been gathered in other theaters of operation. But we believe that is key. We have also examples where, in the broader context of corruption, because that is very much linked to, you know, the discussion about failed states and elites, corrupted elites, etc., where you had interventions like in Georgia, where the EU had a small mission for a year in Georgia just after the change, only attacking the justice system. And that was, again, partial. So you, if you bring up some prosecutors up to speed, but how many can you bring up to speed in a year? And you don't have the police underpinning this, you also have your problem. So a holistic approach in criminal justice, I think, is maybe one of the innovation, or rather experiences or lessons identified we've made.
Great. Mr. Flassenkamp, thank you so very much for your time and for your insights.